From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. This fall, the state of California experienced the deadliest and most destructive wildfire in the state's history. The Camp Fire killed a total of 88 people. And over the 2 weeks that it burned, it destroyed more structures than the 7 worst fires in state history combined. The retirement community of Paradise, located in Butte County, was destroyed in a matter of hours. 158 people are still missing. Survivors of the fire flocked to neighboring Chico, where a tent encampment sprang up next to a Walmart, as devastated Californians regrouped and hoped for the best about their loved ones and homes while trying to avoid the horribly toxic fumes that enveloped a huge swath of the Bay Area. Now that much of the dust and ash has settled, what has happened to the survivors of the Camp Fire and how are their needs being met? We'll go to Northern California to speak with Alexa Benson Valavanis. She is the president and CEO of the North Valley Community Foundation. Welcome to the program, Alexa.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
So, of course, in addition to the toxic fumes and the devastation from the fire, it's raining now in Northern California, which might, of course, be a good thing to help reduce the dry conditions. But I understand there's a huge problem, not just with the possibility of mudslides in the newly devastated areas, but there's also a lot of people who are newly homeless trying to survive in tents, right?
Yes, it's true. Although we've been quite successful during the past 2 weeks or so in making sure that those displaced by the fire do know where the shelters are and are able to get the sheltering that they desperately need. But yes, we do have some areas that tents have emerged, and we're working, the service providers in the community is working hard to make sure those individuals know that we are expecting very wet conditions in the coming days, and a shelter would be a better decision at this time for them.
Can you tell us or give us some sense of the numbers of displaced people that were basically, you know, forced to find refuge in Chico, whether most of them were from Paradise or also surrounding areas that were impacted by the fire?
Yeah, FEMA's most recent numbers are actually 57,000 individuals were displaced by the Camp Fire. There are a number of communities that are working to hold and care for those individuals, but Chico's proximity to the Paradise community, Concow, and the surrounding areas has made us the primary location for those individuals. We're looking at perhaps 29,000 households that will need to be tended to and cared for here in the Chico community.
Were people mostly surviving in those weeks after they fled, surviving in their cars or their tents or shelters or all of the above?
All of the above, but predominantly we had shelters available instantaneously. So makeshift shelters like churches and organizations that wouldn't normally be assisting in something like this were able to open their doors, you know, within hours of the disaster. When we started to realize the severity of the fire and that this was not like anything we had endured before, shelters quickly popped up and individuals were getting into those shelters. But we also have major challenges with homelessness and a housing crisis prior to the campfire. And so what you saw were people that were already vulnerable or in a homeless situation, also had nowhere to go and started to flood the Chico community for services and help and support.
Absolutely. California has an existing housing crisis. I imagine that there might have been people who lost homes that are not going to be able to afford to buy a new home or to move into something comparable because now housing prices are so much higher, and or renters who might have been living in a situation where they could barely afford the rent, now finding that if they need to rent, the rents are out of their reach, right?
That's right. So what we're seeing is there was some numbers look like between 2,000 and 3,000 individuals that actually were staying with loved ones or friends or perhaps on a couch that prior to the fire, that now those homes and those places are completely gone. So we had a group, a segment of the population that was already very vulnerable to potentially be experiencing homelessness, now truly homeless. Our community's rallying. We're trying to do all that we can here at the Community Foundation. We're doing everything that we can for the service providers and for the shelters, as they have to toggle back and forth with those that are displaced by the fire, and hopefully will receive the support of FEMA and their insurance companies, and those that really didn't have any sort of safety net and now are truly in vulnerable situations.
So what are the greatest needs besides housing? Housing, of course, is a long-term issue. Sounds like in the short term, there are enough shelters, but long-term issue is the housing. But what besides housing, what are the needs of folks? Because I imagine many of them escaped with possibly just the clothes on their backs, or if they had a chance to fill their cars, whatever they could stuff into their cars.
Yeah, so the Community Foundation in particular is in an emergency response phase. We have not yet moved into housing and recovery efforts. We are literally making sure that individuals are being provided with services directly related to their basic human needs. And that includes, of course, to your point, sheltering and food and supplies. If they have children, if they have infants, they need everything. There actually wasn't a lot of time for these residents to get out of the danger areas. So they need just about everything in the short term, and of course they're going to need support and help in the long term. What we're doing is we're providing resources to any of the organizations that are giving cash assistance to the evacuees and to the people displaced by the fire. And we're also actively facilitating and distributing gift cards to various shops here in the local community, and Visa cards as well, to make sure that people literally have enough food for today, clothing for today, and what they need right now. And we will shift to the long-term recovery phase here within the next couple of weeks, hopefully. The numbers that we're hearing as of Wednesday is that we have 550 individuals in these shelters, and many of the smaller shelters have since closed. And we are working closely with FEMA and the county to figure out what the transitional housing is going to look like, because as you and your audience may know, we are in a rural community. There aren't a lot of hotels and motels available to begin with, so the challenges are steep.
I understand that people have come through, because of course people rally to help one another when we see such a crisis. There's a housing exchange program that I noticed around the campfire, where people who do have a spare room or even a couch or a home that they can rent out are offering it to survivors of the fire for low rent or even no rent.
That's right. And actually, this is, of course, my favorite part of any conversation today, which is the resilience of the human spirit and the just tremendous outpouring of support. Everybody is doing everything they can. We've had our office filled with people that have driven up from San Jose and Sacramento and San Francisco, and driven down from Oregon just to pass a check over to the Community Foundation, or to let us know that we're simply not alone in this. And individuals are doing that as well. You're able to actually post if you have a room available, if you have clothing, if you have, it's called campfirehousing.org. And it's essentially a Craigslist scenario for these evacuees, where somebody can post what they have and some others can go on and see if it meets their specific needs. So the human spirit is strong, and we're watching individuals just pour their love and support into our region now.
Campfirehousing.org. Is there a fear, Alexa, that once the media coverage dies down, that the survivors will struggle with not just donor fatigue, but just a lack of attention?
You know, I think that's true, that we have to be aware that we are bracing for a very long journey ahead. One of the roles that the Community Foundation can play is in establishing these partnerships with corporations and businesses and families with resources. We are letting them know at the onset that although we're responding immediately to the crisis, we also are going to be here for the long run. And recovery and rebuilding, not only will it take time, but it will take millions of dollars from the private sector's support. So we are trying to get out front of that story and message and let folks know that This is a very long journey, and that although the news and the national spotlights will change, we're going to be here for a long time trying to take care of our residents.
So private funding is unfortunately what is being relied upon quite heavily. Do you have a sense that there's enough government funding, both at the state and federal level, or is it just falling so short that organizations like yours have to step in?
I think the role that we'll play will be to fill the gaps. So where FEMA in the emergency response isn't able to meet every need, that's going to be the role of philanthropy. Where insurance companies fall short, or those that fall through because they didn't have insurance, and for whatever reason government safety nets don't come through, I think then you'll see a heightened focus on the role of philanthropy. That's always been the role that we play, not to take on the job of our government, but just to augment and support our residents to make sure they have what they need. And just keep a heightened focus on what the government should be doing and making sure it's getting done. So that's all part of what we're doing here. I will say that FEMA is on the ground, and we're very grateful for what they have brought in, and they're working very hard to figure out the path forward. As you noted in the opening, this is not something that we have experience with, at least here in California. These fires that we have become accustomed to in previous months and years are nothing like the fires we're experiencing today. We lost an entire town within a matter of a few hours. So even FEMA, I would venture to say, is trying to figure out how to help and what's next.
Right. You brought up an interesting point earlier about the issue of insurance. What among the survivors, those who had the ability to have insurance that adequately covers their losses, may be able to start rebuilding, but a tremendous number of people, I imagine, simply couldn't afford insurance, and may not have been homeowners to begin with that had this kind of fire insurance that would cover losses, right?
Right. We are learning that there were two state of emergencies declared by our federal government, and that perhaps FEMA will have some safety net programs available for those that did not have, that would not traditionally be eligible for FEMA. But we just don't know completely, and I'm reluctant to share anything that I'm hearing secondhand. So what we're doing at the foundation is we are engaging directly with these conversations with FEMA and the county and learning where the gaps will be and figuring out how our housing initiative and how our community wellness initiative will be able to support these individuals. And maybe I've mentioned this already, but we charge 1%. So that means 99% of everything we bring in will be deployed for these campfire evacuees.
So you mentioned that very soon you'll be moving into the long-term phase of the relief. What will that look like as far as you know?
Because it's become very evident that the challenges around housing, we will focus on housing and what we're calling transitional housing, which means anywhere from weeks and months to probably an 18-month period. We're looking at trailers, we're looking at modular homes, prefab homes, of course, teeny village projects, and everything is on the table at the moment. And we will figure out exactly what FEMA is doing to assist in transitional housing, and if there are gaps there or if they're simply not moving fast enough, then we will play a role with our partners in the private sector to make sure people have a place to go.
I imagine that in addition to all of the various physical needs that people have who have survived the fire, that a lot of people might be struggling with the trauma of having lost so much. And I'm wondering if in your work with the survivors of the campfire, you can share some stories with us about how people are dealing with this loss. There might be people who have PTSD even from what they experienced, because some people literally fled with the flames at their backs.
Yeah, the suffering is very acute here now, and I think as some of the shock and denial wears off, just in the traditional framework of what the mind goes through and the psyche goes through during a crisis, I think we're starting to see now all the different stages of the grieving process, and this exacerbates any sort of challenges we already had with mental illness and with individuals that might have been vulnerable. And so we now have an entire community that's feeling that the weight of that pain and suffering, and the trauma is severe. So again, related to the Community Foundation's efforts, transitional housing is our priority with the recovery phase, but we are also focused on child and youth services and community wellness, specifically focused on trauma reduction. We will find partners in this community that are dedicated to helping heal and provide support to community members that have just gone through an unimaginable tragedy. Many did literally try and outrun the flames, and many lost loved ones. We have had reports of now 88 confirmed dead. So you don't just have the trauma of escaping the flames. You have those that truly lost loved ones, lost their property, lost their animals, and the entire community is feeling that. Either we were evacuees, or we know loved ones and family members that lost everything. And so the trauma is severe here.
In addition to everything else, there has been the toxic air quality, because the flames were so intense and the fire burned so fast it obliterated everything in its path. And so you don't just have, I understand, the ash from the fires, but all the particulate matter of the items that burn, the plastics that burn, all the building materials that burn. What has the impact of that been? Obviously on the residents of Chico and the surrounding areas, the Bay Area, San Francisco had a lot of issues, but also on the survivors.
I think we haven't yet seen what those long-term impacts are going to be, because people were subject to so much of that smoke for so long, for 2 weeks' time. Fortunately, I can report that it's Wednesday and the sky is clear, and the planet and the universe has a way of continuing to heal. And so the sky is clear today, but the survivors are not able to go home. They're not able to go back to these burn areas because, to your point, the toxins are so severe. Many of these homes in the Paradise community were built when asbestos was used. Many of these homes, of course, had chemicals, propane, all sorts of things that have made the land inhospitable to them and just not a safe place for them to return to. And really, truly, FEMA determines that that is safe for them. So you have the initial trauma, and then you have multiple layers of potential damage and destruction. And I think everybody's doing their best to make sure that we don't have unnecessary pain on top of what's already happened. But again, I think we, you know, hopefully, it was a 2 week period, and hopefully everybody's physical selves are back to now breathing this clean air and purging anything that the body did take in during that time.
And of course, children are always particularly vulnerable to exposure to toxic air. Was your organization able to distribute the specific kinds of masks that were needed at that time? I know there was a run on the masks. There were even a shortage of masks, but people were walking around trying to cover their faces with a very specific kind of mask that would keep out the majority of particulate matter. Or was it the government that was distributing them?
Everybody was distributing them. Our organization didn't actually distribute the masks, but we were, again, helping fund the organizations that were. Mm-hmm. I heard within a 24-hour period, we did have the masks, and they were being readily distributed to individuals. But then, of course, you have just the challenges. Again, you have a reference point that most people in the North State feel about wildfires and thinking this is going to be like, within the first 48 hours, thinking it was going to be like everything else we'd experienced. And then quickly we realized this was nothing like the car fire. This was nothing like the fires that we've helped support in the past, that we were going to be under clouds of smoke for days. And part of it was just getting people to recognize the severity of the situation and to wear the masks, because we've become accustomed in some ways to fire season. And it's changing on us quickly, and this is not a traditional fire season any longer.
Finally, Alexa, if there are people who want to, individuals who want to donate to the efforts of North Valley Community Foundation from all over California and the country, our show is nationally syndicated, what could their donation at this point provide, both in the short term and long term, for survivors of the fire?
So again, in the short term, we're just going to focus on the emergency response phase and make sure the nonprofit organizations on the ground and the shelters on the ground have what they need. And then we will move to the long-term recovery, which, as I mentioned, will look like an initiative for transitional housing and also child and youth services and trauma reduction and wellness. We talked about it briefly, but we don't fully know what this is going to look like for children to not only lose their home and their security there, but many of them lost their school, their parents lost their place of work. And we will be on the ground communicating directly with these individuals and the services that provide care to them to make sure they have what they need. And we don't yet know.
Give out a website where people can find out more, is not just about the Community Foundation, but also some of the organizations that you support.
So if you go to nvcf.org, which is our site, you'll see a complete list of all the service providers that we're funding. And I think that's a pretty robust list for your audience. It's everything from childcare services for respite for individuals that have parents that have lost everything and are now trying to find jobs and things of that nature. But it's also those that are providing care and support for the homeless population and the increased homeless population. So if you go to nvcf.org, you'll find a complete list of those organizations we're providing services to.
That's nvcf.org. And again, once the media coverage goes away, that's when you're going to have the greatest challenge getting the kinds of funds that are needed to make these long-term and short-term needs be met. Well, we here in Southern California, where our program is based, wish you the best of luck, Alexa, and thank you so much for all the work that you've been doing.
Thank you, Sonali. And of course, our thoughts and prayers have been with Southern California as well.
That's right. We've also struggled with fires here. The Woolsey Fire in particular has destroyed a number of structures, although thankfully the death toll not as high. Thank you again, Alexa.
Thank you, Sonali.
Alexa Benson Valavanis is the president and CEO of North Valley Community Foundation. We've been discussing how survivors of the devastating Camp Fire are doing and some of the aid efforts helping them. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.